the Parsha Vayera, like all of these Parshas, it brings with it the problem of really what to leave out. But if we start at the beginning, that should certainly a recommended choice. Vayera begins with Vayera, Perik Yud Ches, Pasuk Aleph, Vayera, Elav Hashem, Be'elone Mamre. Hashem appears to Avram in the plains of Mamre. He's sitting there by the entrance of his tent in the heat of the day. Before we get to the main Rashi that I wanted to speak about, there's a well-known Rashi. After all, Mamre receives a special mention here, but we're not normally or always told where it is specifically that Hashem appears to Avram. But here, the location is cited. It's in the plains of Mamre. Somehow Mamre has a yichus here. Rashi explains, Husha nosa no etza ala mila. Mamre, and of course Mamre is one of those, that group of three, Oner Eshkolu, Mamre, Avram's, what are called Baalei Bris, his comrades, and Mamre gave Avram an etza with regards to the mila. Lefichach nigla ilav bechelka, and therefore that's a schus for Mamre that Hashem appears to Avram in Mamre's territory. And everyone wants to know what is the nature of this etzah, of this advice that Mamre gave to Avram. After all, in the background to the question is, the simple understanding is that he told him to go ahead with it. Avram doesn't need Mamre's encouragement or his advice. He's been told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to perform the Mila, and that should basically be that. What would Mamre's contribution here be? He doesn't need Mamre to endorse HaKadosh Baruch Hu's command. There's a very interesting comment of Chasam Sofer, who says that if you wish to know the content of Mamre's advice, take a look at the balance of the pasuk, which says, "V'hu yoshev pesach ha'oel kechomayim," he's sitting by the entrance of the tent. In other words, Avram is stationary. That was the etzah of Mamre. Avram is always active. No sooner has he done the mila, he's already looking for something else to do. And Mamre said to him from the side, "Take it easy. You just done the mila. You're 99 years old. Sit down and relax." Just for a moment. Even that moment didn't really last very long. But this is Chasam Sofer, is Mamre's Eitzah to Avram. Yoshev Pesach, oh, it's the middle of the day, sit down and relax. So says Chasam Sofer. And in fact, he proceeds, Chiddush on Chiddush, that this actually has an emanation further on down the line. As we know, Chumash Bereishis is the formative Chumash, the events of the lives of the Avos, we say pertaining to them, Masa Avos Simon Labonim, what the experiences of the Avos are, pre-experiences of things that will happen to the Jewish people later on in history. And indeed, we find a similar idea of the main protagonist being told by someone from the outside, someone who is either not Jewish or not yet Jewish, who tells him to take it easy. And that's in the beginning of Parshas Yisro, where Moshe is sitting and he's judging Min HaBoker Ad HaErev, and he's going to wear himself out. And Yisro says to him, take it easy. Navol Tibol, you're going to wear yourself out, you're going to wear everyone else out. Delegate, and of course one often needs to hear that from someone else, delegate, and sorry, I love him, etc. And Chasam Sofer says the roots, the Maisa Avos, even of someone from the side telling the person in the center to take it a little bit easier, as happened with Yisro and Moshe, can be traced back to Mamre's Eitza to Avram Avinu. So that's a very interesting angle on the well-known Rashi of Elone Mamre. But to get to the Rashi at hand, which is actually the first Rashi in the Parsha, the words of Vayera Elav, and Rashi comments, well-known Rashi, Levaker Esachole. This was for purposes of Bikur Cholim, of visiting the sick, which is interesting and actually has halachic import in the sense that the source of the mitzvah, and we know there's a mitzvah called Bikur Cholim, right, to visit the sick, the source of the mitzvah, seemingly, as far as the Torah is concerned, is v'ahavta l'recha kamocha. All of those mitzvahs, hachnasas orchim, and avayas ameis, and bikur cholim, all those that we say in the morning, they're all really under the rubric of v'ahavta l'recha kamocha. The Torah doesn't say to vakir sachola and tachnis orchim, but it says v'ahavta l'recha kamocha. And so says Rambam in Hilchas Eivel in the Mishnah Torah, when he discusses these well-known categories of mitzvah, he concludes by saying all of these are really contained under the umbrella mitzvah of v'ahavta l'recha kamocha. But there is another mitzvah, and that is v'halachta b'drachav, to follow in Hashem's ways. And what that means is, or bo tidbak, to cleave to Hashem, as the Gemara in Maseches Sota, in the end of the first parak, discusses and describes that to emulate Hashem. That's what it means to be close to Hashem, to emulate Hashem. And it gives examples, just like Hashem is Malbish Arumim, Kosnos Or, for Adam and Chava, just like Hashem is Mevaka Cholim, and etc. and so forth. So should you. That's called connecting to Hashem. So it's interesting, because that means that we discovered that every mitzvah ben Adam l'chaveiro really has two aspects to it. And it's also a mitzvah ben Adam l'makom, because when a person performs an act of kindness or courtesy or consideration for others and gives to others, in through that he is coming closer to Hashem. And that's what mitzvahs ben Adam l'makom are all about. But it's somewhat oblique. A mitzvah ben Adam l'makom, a person addresses Hashem or Hashem's command head on. Here he emulates Hashem and thereby attains a certain closeness. And from a certain point of view, it's interesting to ponder, there's an aspect of closeness to Hashem that a person can only attain by being kind to others, because that's the closeness through emulation that comes through mitzvahs ben Adam l'chaveiro. And so it's a halachic Rashi, if that's the case, because when whatever kindness we see HaKadosh Baruch Hu doing now becomes subsumed within the mitzvah of V'alachta B'drachah, which is its own mitzvah. L'vakar Sachola, why is Avram sick? Amar of Chamer Rebbe Chanina, Yom Shlishi L'Miloso Hay. It was the third day after the Mila, Uva HaKadosh Baruch Hu V'sha'al B'Shlomo. Hashem came and inquired after his welfare and visited him. So this is the well-known Rashi. What's Vayera all about? It's for purposes of Bikur Cholim. And of course, as always, we see the Rashi, we read it, we translate it, we understand it on some basic level, but then we proceed to ask the question, why does Rashi make this comment? After all, the word Vayera Elav is more or less self-understood. Hashem appears to Avram. Rashi's goal is never to give us information. Rashi's goal is always that of resolution. If there's a problem with the Pasuk, Rashi will respond. But what's the problem? The Pasuk says Hashem appeared to Avram, and Rashi feels he needs to tell us what the visit was about. Well, a classic approach, which is taken amongst Mefarshi Rashi, is that this appearance, and of course, just to back up the question, this is not the first time Hashem has appeared to Avram. It's happened before, will happen again, and Rashi doesn't comment. So why does he comment here? But as these Mefarshi Rashi explain, that's exactly the point. In other words, in all other occasions, before and after, if Hashem appears to Avram, we always get a message. There's always a content to that appearance. Hashem appears to Avram in the beginning of Lech Lecha and says, Lezarecha etinas haaretz hazos, so on and so forth, I'll give this land to your descendants and whatever else it may be. And that makes our situation unique. Because the Pasuk says Hashem appeared to Avram, but doesn't say what he said. It's just there. It's open, seemingly undefined, unrealized. And therefore, it does actually present something of a pshat question, because Hashem appears to him, but why and what for? And why doesn't it say here? To this, Rashi answers that it was in response to his situation, which is that's why Rashi feels that he needs to give us the content of what the visit was all about. Because if the Pasuk doesn't say it noticeably, Rashi has to fill it in using the words of Chazal. That's a well-known approach to this Rashi. It's seemingly straightforward and not much more to say. But interestingly, this approach is rejected by the of the earliest Mefarshei Rashi, the foremost commentator on Rashi, Rabbeinu Eliyahu Mizrahi, and he states emphatically that that is not the reason why Rashi quoted. Again, to state the reason and then to hear his rejection. It's not because the pasuk didn't say what the content is, therefore Rashi feels he needs to fill in that gap, so to speak, for a very simple reason, says Mizrahi. There is ample room to say that this visit too had a content. It also had a message. After all, we will find quite soon HaKadosh Baruch Hu communicates with Avram. Where is this? We take a look in Pasuk Kaf and Pasuk Kaf Aleph of this perek. Posukaf vayomer Hashem, zaka Sodom v'amorah ki rabba. Hashem begins to tell Avram about what's happening in Sodom. The outcry is great. The chatosam ki kavdom ma'od. Their sin is exceedingly grave. Erdona, I'm going to do something about it. I'm going to see what the situation is, so to speak, and see what to do about it. And that's said to Avram, because Avram then responds to that and starts bargaining. Maybe it's 50, 45, 40, etc. Which means that if you only look a little bit further on in the Parsha, says the Mizrahi, you will find a message accompanying the visit. Now, you might ask, well, that's 20 seconds time. I mean, can that be the message for this visit? If it's the message for this visit, why isn't it said straight away? Is that a good question? Says the Mizrahi, no, it isn't. Because the answer is in Rashi himself. Rashi tells us in Pasuk Gimel, when Avram sees the three guests or these three wayfarers, in Pasuk Gimel, Vayomar, and I'll read the whole Pasuk, which will get us out of pronunciation issues, or rather, Vayomar, according to one comment in Rashi, Hashem, im no matasichem be'einecha, ana tavor me'alavdecha. The question is, that second word in the Pasuk, Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, who is he referring to? Rashi says, in one of his approaches, that he's talking to Hashem. And Avram is saying, I know we're communing and we're meeting, but there are guests here. And he asks of Hashem, please don't leave while I tend to the guests. From which we learn, Gedolach Nasas Orchim, Yosem Mikabalas Pnei Shechina, taking care of guests is more important, supersedes even receiving the divine presence. We learn that from Avram. Which means, says Mizrahi, we can well understand how Hashem's words to Avram about Sodom may well have been the reason why he appeared to him, except that was put on hold because Avram interrupted in order to deal with the guests. But once he'd finished with that and then came back, Hashem then communicates him the reason why he visited him in the first place. And therefore, it's not enough to say Hashem appeared and didn't say anything. Avram didn't give him a chance to say anything because he went straight away to the guest. But when he finally came back, this is the message. And indeed, we should note, this is not Rashi's approach, but there are other Rishonim who actually take this approach. The Ralbag, whom we mentioned last week, Rabbeinu Levi ben Gershon, says very, on a very, very straightforward level, Vayeir Hashem al Avram, Hashem appeared to Avram, to what end? To tell him about Sodom, as we will find in 20 Pesukim's time, when Avram returns to hear the message. Which means, says Mizrahi, we have not yet justified Rashi's comment that it's about Bikur Cholim. Maybe it's to tell him about Sodom, which will happen quite soon. And if that's the case, says Mizrahi, the question will return, why does Rashi feel the need to tell us that the purpose of the visit was Bikur Cholim? What issue in the Pasuk is Rashi addressing? And Mizrahi says, very simply, there's something you can read this Pasuk so many times and never notice what the Mizrahi is about to say. Because how does Vayera begin? Vayera elav Hashem be'elo ne'mamre. Hashem appears to him eno ne'mamre. So far, so good. Is there any issue here? Says Mizrahi, there absolutely is. Because Vayera elav Hashem, if we translate into English, is Hashem appeared to him. Him is a pronoun. A pronoun always relies on a noun that's mentioned in the beginning. which means you first need to establish who's who, what's what, who's appearing to who, who's talking to who. Then you can move into pronouns. And in fact, we find this throughout the Torah. That's how a parsha needs to begin, even though you could argue that we could work it out ourselves, but that's not how you open a parsha. You can't open an episode by saying him or he. And therefore the Torah will begin, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe lemor, each time. After a while, you could argue, I think we know who's talking to whom. We've seen it 100 times. But it happens every time, because that's how you begin a parsha. You can't begin a parsha by saying, and Hashem appeared to him. Who's him? And this is actually a very pressing pshat question. And indeed, says Mizrahi, it's so unusual. And this is the point that Rashi is responding to. Because if, unusually, the Torah has begun with a pronoun, it can only be because the Torah wants to make a point of bringing us back to Avram as he was most recently mentioned. If the beginning of the episode ties you to the earlier, because a pronoun will always take you back to the noun. So the beginning of Vayera, the Torah wants to take you back to the end of Parshas Lech Lecha. And there you'll find Avram mentioned by name. And what is Avram doing at the end of Parshas Lech Lecha? The mitzvah of Mila. And then you move back to the beginning of Vayera, and Hashem appears to him connected to that episode, because this visit is connected to that episode, because it was Bikur Cholim for Avram while he is convalescing from the mitzvah of Mila, as he was described doing last we saw him mentioned in the end of Parshas Lech Lecha. So it's very interesting. On the one hand, we see what seems to be the more accessible explanation for Rashi, but the greatest of Mefarshei Rashi are already weighing up the potential responses, and this from Mizrahi, the issue is right in front of you. It's not a question of what the Pasuk omits, namely a message, but what the Pasuk states, namely the pronoun as opposed to the noun. Okay. So if we can summarize, so far we've seen really two approaches in the Rishonim to the point of Vayera, the content of this visit. For Rashi, it's Bikur Cholim, as we discussed, and for the Ralbag, the message is Hashem's words to Avram about Sodom in Pasuk Kaf and Pasuk Kaf Aleph. But we need to be aware that there is a third approach here, and it is quite radical. And it sparked a great deal of discussion, and it's to be found in the writings of the Rambam, in the Mor Nevuchim, in Chelek Beis, Perek Mem Gimel. And Rambam says, we will say in his words, if you wish to know what was the content of the visit, Vayera Elav Hashem, and then what? And what did he say? What happened then? Pasuk doesn't say. Says Rambam, yes it does. And it does so straight away. How so? What does that mean? We're not going to hear Hashem's words to Avram for a good long while. What does Rambam mean? Rambam says, we're dealing with a concept called klal v'chakach prat. The Torah mentions something generally, and then we'll give you its details. What does the Torah say generally? Hashem appeared to Avram. And what are the details? Says Rambam, the next 18 psukim are the details of that appearance. What is the background to what the Rambam is saying? Rambam asserts, and he discusses this in the Mor Nevuchim, also in the Mishneh Torah, when you have every Navi, and this for Rambam is one of the key differences between, as we know, Moshe Rabbeinu, Lo Kam Yisrael, Navi Od Kemoshe. In what way is Moshe different? In a number of ways. But one of the ways, says Rambam, is every other Navi receives his Nevuah through the agency of a Malach, of an angel, of an emissary from Hashem, a conduit. Moshe is the exception to that. Pe'el Pe'a Daberbo, he receives communication directly from Hashem. But what that means to say is the Rambam takes this, in a sense, even further, is that if Nevuah happens through a Malach, then seeing a Malach basically is a marker for a prophetic experience. That means if you see someone in the Chumash who meets a Malach, that's another way of saying they are currently receiving Nevuah. They're having a prophetic vision. And that is what's happening here. Which means, according to the Rambam, all of the events which are described in the 18, 19 psukim at the beginning of Parshas Vayera are all the nevuah that Avram has, because these guests are malachim, and Rambam concurs with that, which means that his meeting with malachim is basically a prophetic vision. But all of this is communicating messages to him from Hashem. Sarah will have a child, etc. and so forth. And that is the realization of the opening words. Vayera elav Hashem. Hashem appeared to him in the form of what these ensuing psukim are about to describe. And says Rambam, my source for this idea is in the Medrash, or support for what I'm saying is in the Medrash. Because when we come back to Pasuk Gimel, and we have to watch the words carefully. Again, Vayomar, Avram says, Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, to who is he addressing? And Rabbi Chia, in the Medrash, Bereishis Rabba, Rashi also quotes this, but Rambam sees this as the definitive approach, is that he's talking to the Malachim, and he's not talking to Hashem. Why is he not talking to Hashem? Because he's not asking Hashem to not go away. But this is his meeting with Hashem, is his interaction in his nevuah, in his prophetic vision with these malachim. It's all the same thing. That means that whatever is happening with the whatever the pasuk describes with these malachim is not in competition, quote unquote, with his vision with Hashem. It's actually the contents of his meeting with Hashem. So this is the approach of Rambam. As we can appreciate, quite a few people reacted to this thesis of Rambam. Foremost amongst them is Ramban. Ramban takes extremely strong exception to this approach of Rambam on two grounds. Firstly, in terms of looking at the psukim and see, do they bear out what the Rambam is saying? And secondly, in terms of the conceptual underpinnings that the Rambam has based his approach on. The Ramban attacks him basically on both fronts. And let us see how that happens. Firstly, says Ramban, if all of this is a nevuah, one really needs to now consider the three or four or maybe more psukim which describe in great detail the meal that Avram prepares for these malachim. According to Rambam, he is having a vision in which he's preparing a meal for them. That is effectively meaningless because it doesn't matter. It didn't happen. The point is the content of the message they wish to give, whether or not part of his vision is him preparing a meal with all of the details, ben bakar, rachvatov, vechapas lechem, and none of that actually happened in reality, which means none of it is actually makes a difference even to the message when you think about it. Well, and if he didn't shech the fleshik meal for them, so they're not going to tell him that he's going to have a child. Secondly, says Ramban, these malachim did not only pay a visit to Avram, they also paid a visit to Lot, which is going to happen in chapter 19. Now, if you tell me that Avram was a Navi, says Ramban, I'm okay with that. I agree with that. If you tell me Lot was a Navi, I am not okay with that, because Lot's not a Navi. So, shall we say that in the same way that Avram has this nevuah about the malachim when they approach him, and then Lot has a parallel nevuah and subsequently when they approach him, Lot's not a Navi. He's many things. A Navi is not one of them. And moreover, says Ramban, if indeed all of this is part of a mare nevui, of a prophetic vision, that means the Lot has a nevuah, and in the nevuah he's told to leave Sodom, but this is all a nevuah, and when he wakes up, where is he? Because if he's still in Sodom, his nevuah is not going to help him. Which means, if these things are things that he sees, but not things that he does, so then he had a fantastic nevuah about being told to leave Sodom, and when he wakes up, where is he? Because if he hasn't moved, he's still in Sodom. And with regards to the principle of the matter, and this becomes harder for us to have an approach one way or the other, you just need to watch Rambam and Ramban. But Ramban says, I don't accept the Rambam's notion that one of the differences between Moshe and the other Nevi'im is that only Moshe receives Nevuah directly from Hashem, and all other Nevi'im receive it through a Malach, to the extent that seeing a Malach and having Nevuah for almost every other Navi are one and the same thing. I do not concur with that, says Ramban. If you look in the Chumash and if you look through Chazal, you'll see they enumerate many differences, but this isn't one of them. Hashem says to Moshe, I appear in the beginning of Va'era, I appear to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Bekel Shakai, but not through Shmi Hashem. Those are different names to which Hashem appears. There's no reference to they were through a Malach and Moshe is direct. Chazal say the difference between them is, the way it's described in Yevamos and Daf Mem Tes, is that Moshe Rabbeinu, his prophecy was through what's called the Aspaklari HaMe'ira, a clear lens. Their lens was Aspaklari She'ena Me'ira, not so clear, says Ramban. Those are aspects of clarity, but that's not about direct versus indirect. Unless you say for Ramban, that's why it's not as clear, because it comes through a Malach. But in any case, says Ramban, I do not concur with what Rambam is saying. The concept of seeing a Malach and the concept of having Nevuah are two entirely different things. And when the Torah says a person saw a Malach, it doesn't mean it's Nevuah, and it doesn't mean the person was a Navi. And thus you find Lot sees Malachim. You've got to have some type of traction, some type of orientation, and eligibility in order to see a Malach, but it's not the fact that you're a prophet, because Lot sees a Malach, and so does Hagar later on, and we're not aware that Hagar, the Gemara will tell us in Megillah and Daf Yudalad, that there are 7 prophetesses in the history of prophecy, and Hagar's not on the list. She saw a Malach, but that's very different than having Nevuah. And therefore, says Ramban, Sof Davar, do not adopt the approach of Rambam. It is objectionable on every level. Well, that's Ramban. However, as we know, Rambam has his own assembly of commentators. And again, at the end of the day, everyone wants to know what the pshat is and what the emes is, but there are those who will defend the Rambam's position. And among them, in fact, the Ritva, Rabbi Yontov of Seville, Rabbi Yontov Alashvili, who I was informed, actually, I'm not sure exactly what the date is, but this year is his 700th Yortzeit. He passed away in 1320. And here we're headed for 2020. So the Ritva has an entire work written entirely in defense of Rambam from Ramban's questions. It's called the Sefer Zikaron of the Ritva. And one of those who defends Rambam is the Abarbanel. In addition to his prolific writing on the Chumash and Nevi'im and Ksuvim, etc., Abarbanel has a commentary on the Mor Nevuchim. And Abarbanel has certain chidushim to say within Rambam in order to respond to Ramban's question. Let's see what he says. Firstly, with regards to Ramban's opening question, if indeed Avram's this meeting with the Malach all took place within a prophetic vision, so then Avram didn't at that time actually prepare any food for them. Why does the Pasuk describe it in such detail if it didn't actually happen? It's neither here nor there. But says Abarbanel, a great chiddush, and that is, it does make a difference. It is of the essence. It is material to the message. Because for Avram and Sarah to receive a child at this advanced age is a miracle. The miracle was deserved by them due to their great merits. And their merits were represented by the way that they would extend hospitality to people. As if to say, the meal, which is a fascinating point here of the Abarbanel, the meal that Avram sees himself in this vision preparing is actually an expression of the subtotal of all the meals that he had prepared all those years for all those people, which represent the merit in which he receives the news that he's going to have a child. And moreover, says Abarbanel, looked at this way, for Avram to see in a vision that he's preparing a meal is actually more significant than if he did. Why? Because if he just, quote-unquote, prepared a meal, you never know how much that's worth, how far that goes. It's one event. But here, this is actually a marker of essential merit for Avram, that this behavior is what warrants, and it becomes embedded now in the Nevuah, that's the prelude to the message that him and Sarah will have a child. So it actually represents the essential character of Avram. That's what you see in prophecy that you wouldn't see even in real life. Real life are events. Prophecy is stature. So that's he completely reverses the whole Ramban's question, and in fact it is of the utmost significance, this aspect that Avram sees in the vision. But let's come to Lot. After all, Ramban raised a very serious question. Lot's not a Navi. No one's going to say that he is. Says Abarbanel, Chiddush. And that is that, according to Rambam, that all of this is a prophetic vision. It doesn't mean that Avram had his vision of these three Malachim, and then they went to Sodom and Lot had his vision. But rather, every reference to any encounter between the Malachim and anyone is all part of Avram's vision. That means, and Avram's a Navi, so Avram at first has this vision that these Malachim are coming to him, and then they interact with him, and they tell him he will have a child, etc. And then as the Pasuk proceeds to describe them going to Sodom and everything that happens with Lot, Avram also then has this vision of what is happening with them. Which means, again, similarly, one will have to say, Lot does not actually extend hospitality to them. But it's part of Avram's vision because this is the merit in which Lot is saved. Which is interesting because Chazal identify it with Lot keeping his mouth shut when they went down to Mitzrayim, that Sarah is not really Avram's sister. But according to the Abarbanel's approach of Rambam, that what any event in this vision is really the contributing merit to that vision. So as surely as Avram's outstanding Hachnosas Orchim gave him his miracle that him and Sarah will have a child, so too Lot Lahavdil. But Lot's Hachnosas Orchim, credit where credit is due, was also responsible for him being saved. The only question is, how will Avram's vision of the Malachim telling Lot to leave help Lot if he's there in Sodom and he's out, he's beyond transmission and no one's talking to him? Says Abarbanel, what must have happened in reality is that Lot does not have a prophecy whereby anyone is telling him to leave. But what he did receive was a very strong feeling that he needs to leave right now. As if to say it's a premonition or it's an overwhelming urge to get his family, whoever will leave, and he can't explain why. And if he told them, they wouldn't believe him. And he himself is not quite sure, but he's got to leave. And whoever comes with him, they're the ones that come with him. And in fact, says Abarbanel, so this now explains to his satisfaction the Ramban's position, and he hasn't really addressed Rambam's position. He hasn't really addressed Ramban's issues of, is every Nevuah the same as seeing a Malach? I mean, that's very hard to know how to comment. But in terms of the Psukim, this is how the Rambam would understand the Psukim. And then we come to the final comment of Abarbanel. And that is, I've brought you the Rambam, I've mentioned Ramban's questions, I've answered all Ramban's questions, and the final analysis, I think the Ramban is correct. In other words, for all of his defense of Rambam, because this is, to his understanding, how the Rambam would respond, but if you ask me, says Abarbanel, if I had to choose, I'd choose Ramban. Now, I'll tell you why. The answer is in the final pasuk of Perek Yud Ches. For me, this is the decisive pasuk. Perek Yud Ches, pasuk Lamed Gimel. So what have we seen? We've seen Avram and the three guests. We've seen Avram bargaining with Hashem for the people of Sodom. And then Pasuk Lamed Gimel. Vayelech Hashem. Karsher kilol et aber el Avram. Hashem went when he finished speaking to Avram. Va'avram shav livkomo. Avram went back. Says Abar Parnell, what does this pasuk signify? This pasuk, whatever happened in that meeting, this pasuk signifies the end of that meeting. It's finished. Hashem went back, Avram went back, and it's over. And the next pasuk, the next perek, then describes the malachim in Sodom. Says Abar Parnell, for me, the only way to explain Rambam's position here with regards to Lot is that it's part of Avram's vision. But the pasuk already told us that Avram's meeting and the vision contained therein had concluded at the end of Perek Yud Ches, which means Perek Yud Ches can no longer be part of his vision. It's certainly not part of Lot's vision, because Lot doesn't get a vision, because he's not a Navi. It really sounds like it actually happened, as Ramban says. And that's why my conclusion, says Abar Parnell, would be to side with Ramban in this matter. So this question is by no means, or the discussion is by no means over, because it will now run through all of the other cases where someone sees a malach in the Torah, which includes Yaakov in his struggle with, right, V'yavik ish imo, and includes Bilam, who also has a malach, and Hagar, etc. All of these things will be reviewed and debated by Rambam, his opponents in this machlokas, and his defenders as well. But for our purposes, we've just seen how it relates to the beginning of our parsha. I'd like to just make reference to a short comment, but it's a very, very special, in fact, which relates to Perek Kaf, and specifically to Pasuk Yud Gimel of Perek Kaf. So what happens in Perek Kaf is, again, Avram goes down to Eretz Plishtim, and as is his practice, for purposes of his and Sarah's protection, he says that she is his sister. He's done this already in last week's parsha, in Lech Lecha, and he's doing it again in this week's parsha. This is his practice also in Parshas Vayera with Eretz Plishtim. Clearly, there was no communication between those two countries, because no one ever heard what happened to Paro. And moreover, which is equally likely, is that Paro didn't publicize what happened, because, of course, Paro was really humiliated at that time. Vayinagashem is Paro. That's your Masa Ovis for the plagues coming on the Egypt. The first plague came to Paro in Parshas Lech Lecha. Paro doesn't like to publicize the fact that he was afflicted with anything. And therefore, clearly, that was kept very much in Egypt, which means Avram could do this. And as he himself says, wherever he went, he would do this. It's just people didn't communicate with each other. And the truth is, until relatively recently, that remained the case. Again, lehavdil. So Avimelech takes Sarai, because she thinks she's Avram's sister. Hashem appears to Avimelech, which is again part of this discussion, and says that that's a terrible thing that he did. Avram is... She's married to Avram. And then Avimelech gets up in the morning and confronts Avram. Why did you do this? And Avram explains himself. And in fact, in Pasuk Yud Aleph, the famous Pasuk, the Malbim says, Vayomer Avram, ki amarti rak ein yeras elokim b'mokam hazeh, v'haraguni al devarishti. There's no fear of God in this place. They would have killed me if they knew that I was married. So that's interesting, because Avram did not volunteer that information. But when Avimelech confronts him and says, why did you act in this way? Avram tells him exactly why. He tells him a little bit about his country and what they're capable of. They may have been sophisticated in their own way, but without Yiras Elokim, those rules could change in a minute. And he feared for his life. He then says that she is his sister, in the sense that she is his cousin, in fact. And then Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayihi, Kasher hisu osi Elokim mibeis avi, and we'll translate as simply as we can. Says Avram, it was when Hashem distanced me from my father's house. Va'omarla, I said to Sarah, zechastecha sheta si imadi. This is a kindness, if you will perform it for me. El kolam akom asher navosham imri li achi hu. Say that he's my brother. Okay, and that's Avram explaining himself. Avimelech doesn't really respond, or in fact he does. He sends them away, which means he probably agrees with Avram's assessment of his country. So, But to go back to Pasuk Yud Gimel and to focus on these words, Vayihi kasher hisu osi Elokim mibeis avi. And let's see what Rashi says. Unkelus tirgem mashe tirgem. Unkelus translated, however he translated, V'yesh liyashiv od davar davar al ofanav. But one can resolve the question, and we'll have to get back to Unkelus, because Rashi doesn't really say what he says, but one says Rashi, Unkelus said his way, but one can resolve the pasuk as follows. And the background to the problem here is hisu sounds like someone who's being led astray. And what does that mean to say that kasher hisu osi Elokim mi beis avi? It now becomes a very problematic phrase, because Hashem did obviously takes Avram from A to B, but chas v'chalila, you can't say hisu osi in terms of what it sounds like it means that he led him astray. Vatelech vatesa, we say about Hagar, she could wandering around aimlessly without direction. Hashem didn't do that to Avram. However, says Rashi, Hisu doesn't have to mean someone who's led astray. It just means someone who is not in a fixed position, someone who's not settled and moving. Kosho tziyani HaKadosh Baruch Hu beis avi. Lios mishotet vanad mi mokom la mokom. Just to be moving from place to place, which I was, and I knew, and that's what it means. Because I'm traveling, because Hashem tells me to travel, right? I'm in transit very often, therefore I'm in unfamiliar surroundings. I need to take care of myself, protect myself, and my wife, and therefore I asked her to do this. So, in other words, what Rashi's done is he's really, one could say, stripped the word hisu from any type of aimlessness in terms of direction, conceptual direction. It just means a person who's moving from place to place, which Avram was, with a very specific aim in mind. That's Rashi's approach. But what we see is that Unkelus remains faithful to the word hisu as being led astray. And let us see, again, Rashi says Unkelus translated, how it translated. Let's see Unkelus carefully, word by word. Says Unkelus, Vahava, it was, Kadto Amamaya, when the nations erred, or strayed, Basa Ovde Yedehon, after the work of their hands, in other words, pagans, Yasi Karav Hashem, Nedachalte Mibes Ava. Hashem drew me near to his fear, right, to relationship with him from my father's household. What exactly has Unkelus done? Effectively, he has prized apart the words hisu from the words osi Elokim mi beis avi. In other words, certainly if you would read and if you look again at the pasuk, it sounds like it's all one phrase. Kasher hisu osi Elokim mi beis avi. But Hashem didn't lead Avram astray. Hisu means led astray. And therefore, Unkelus says the meaning is you've got to prize these two terms apart. Kasher hisu refers to others, all those who strayed after idolatry. And then the next phrase, osi Elokim mi beis avi. Hashem took me towards him and took me away from my father's household. That is quite a chiddush. And again, Unkelus, who is translating the pasuk, but for him, this is the clearest path through the pasuk. That's his resolution. He keeps the meaning of his u as being led astray, but it's got nothing to do with Avram. It's the others. And Avram, they are his u, and I am Elokim beis avi. Hashem took me closer to him. Okay. What's interesting is, aside from the Chiddush, and it's not often that we take a good look at Unkelus and really see what he's done in translating the Pasuk, but what's interesting is Rashi's presentation of Unkelus, I think, is unique in the sense that Rashi quotes Unkelus the whole time. It'll normally tell you what Unkelus says. Targum, Unkelus, Tirgem, Unkelus, such and such. Either word for word, or he'll give you the substance or the content of Unkelus. Here, Rashi uses a very enigmatic phrase. Unkelus tirgem, mashe tirgem. He translated that which he translated. I mean, I think that we can safely say that's true always. Because you just said that he translated the pasuk. So what's the meaning behind these words? Unkelus tirgem, mashe tirgem. And there's a fascinating comment, really a golden vort. with regards to this Rashi that was said by Rav Meir Shapira. Rav Meir Shapira, of course, the Rosh Hashiva of Lublin, Shiva's Chachmi Lublin, founder of the Daf Yomi, and this was actually heard in America, because he visited America for the yeshiva. And he says there's a very special meaning here, what Rashi says, Unculus translated that which he translated. What do we know about Unculus? Unculus Hager. He was not born Jewish, he was born actually into Roman nobility. And after a while, he sees the sham, or wherever the Roman Empire was holding. I mean, he saw through it very rapidly. And in fact, like many others of among the Romans, he saw Judaism morally and directionally as far superior. And he converted to Judaism. And it was a shanda in the Mishpacha, because he's from Roman nobility. And in fact, his uncle sent to have him taken back. So he sent a legion. This is described in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah and Daf Yud. And he sent a squadron of Roman soldiers to take him back. So they came to Unculus. And they said, Unculus, your uncle wants you back in Rome. He said, why? They said, well, you're converting to Judaism. That's a terrible thing. And Unculus says, no, it's actually a wonderful thing. I said, what do you mean? He starts engaging them in conversation. And by the time he's finished, I mean, these are smart people, they all were won over to his side and they all converted and no one came back. So it was an absolute disaster. So now he's got to get Unculus back again. So he sends another squadron of soldiers and he says to them, take him back, don't talk to him. Do not engage him in conversation. Just tie him up and bring him back. So they come to Unculus, and they're there to take Unculus. Said, why are you here? No one's talking. But they start to gather him together and take him out. No one's saying anything to him. So as he leaves, he kisses the mezuzah. And that was it. That was too much for them. So one of them says, what's that? He says, a mezuzah. What's a mezuzah? He said, mezuzah, it's a wonderful thing. Mm. I mean, think about how everyone else, or any of the other leaders, where are they? They're on the inside, and they've got soldiers like you protecting them on the outside. Here, we're all on the inside, Hashem is on the outside protecting us. They thought that was just amazing, and they all converted to Judaism. Mm. So it wasn't easy, really, to get Unculus back until the third time. He says, whatever happens, do not speak to him. And then they took him back. V'chule v'chule, as the Gemara describes. But Unculus's journey, I mean, and his contribution through Targum Unculus, he became a Talmud of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, the greatest of the greats. And so the Meir Shapira says, it's an amazing situation, because when you think about it, everything that Unculus is describing in the Pasuk actually happened to him. Because effectively, this is the Pasuk which says everyone else was completely directionless, led astray, and Hashem brought me close to him and took me away from my father's family. And that's why Rashi says, we look at Unculus and see what he says, but this is Rashi's, in a sense, salute to Unculus, where he says, Unculus translated that which he translated, meaning he translated into action the way he translated the Pasuk, because he was a living expression of this very Pasuk. So that's really a very special comment on that occasion from Rav Meir Shapira. Let's conclude by referring to Perek Kaf Aleph, which is actually the laning for the first day of Rosh Hashanah. And what happens in Perek Kaf Aleph? Hagar, Shmuel, where Yitzhak is born, Yishmael is causing trouble, and Hagar and Yishmael are sent away. And she's wandering around, Vatelech Vatesa, wandering around. And till finally, and she thinks it's all over. But Pasuk Yud Zayin, Perek Kaf Aleph, Pasuk Yud Zayin. Now Hagar and Yishmael are saved, and that's his own discussion. Why are they saved? Why is Yishmael saved? What will come from him? Doesn't sound like he deserves to be saved. Is that in the future? How is he in the present? Etc. Pasher Usham. Pasuk Yud Zayin. Vayishmael Elokim es kol hanar. Hashem heard the voice of the nar, Yishmael. Vayikra malach Elokim el Hagar min hashamayim. Malach calls to Hagar and says, "What's? Don't worry. Hashem has heard. It will be okay." And then she sees a well, and they are able to get water, and continue as the psukim describe. So it's very interesting that, and once again, here you see Hagar has her own encounter with or the conversation with the Malach. So Meshech Chochma says, you know, this is not the first time actually the Hagar is with the Torah records a conversation between Hagar and the Malach. It happened last week also, because last week she ran away from Sarai, and then the Malach says, "No, don't worry, go back. It's worth it. Shuvi el Sarai, give your take, v'sanita chasyotech," which she does. That's in Parshas Lech Lecha, Perik Tet Zayin, Pasuk Tes, and there the pasuk reads. Or Pasuk Zayin, Vayimtza'a Malach Hashem Al Ein Hamayim. A Malach finds her, so to speak, and and he says, "Where are you going? Where are you coming from? Where are you going?" etc. and so forth. So Meshech Chochma says it's very interesting because the Torah gives like markers for these two callings, in a sense, or these two conversations. Last week it says that he found her, and it really sounds like he approached her. In this week's parsha, it sounds like he spoke to her, but he kept his distance. Because the pasuk says he called her min hashamayim, he called her from heaven. He's not finding her, he's not approaching her, they're not meeting, he's calling to her from a distance. Why? And Meshech Chochma says these two meetings, or these two conversations, were so different because they represent, in a sense, a transition within Hagar. See, Hagar, she'll get a message from a Malach, but it's not the same method, it's not the same experience. Why? Because in last week's Parsha, she yet has an affinity for Sarah's house, as is evidenced by the fact that the Malach tells her to go back. She still has a connection with Sarah's household. And that says something about her. And therefore, because she still maintains that affinity, not only does the Malach speak to her, but he approaches her. She has an encounter with a Malach, and that's the level that she's on. All of that has changed by this week, because there's no going back, and the Malach doesn't tell her to go back, and she doesn't think to go back. She never does, and she goes wherever she goes. Nishma goes. They've cut ties with Avram's house by this stage, and in so doing, they lost their connection with the type of thing that happens in Avram's house, where Malachim are, and the level that is represented by that, which means she's dropped in her level. She no longer, she's disconnected now to Avram's household. And because she has distanced herself from Avram's household, and there's no going back, you see that distance in the way the Malach speaks to her. She needs water, and Hashem has plans for her and for Yishmael. So they will be saved, and a message will come, but it comes min hashamayim. She gets a long distance call, but it's not a close proximity meeting. So says Meshech Chochma. Very interesting. But there is a follow-up, because here we are saying, you see through Hagar, that when she's on a level where she's as she should be, in her terms, so she'll be zocha, so to speak, to a direct encounter. And if she's not really on that level, she doesn't deserve it, so she's not fitting, so then she'll get a call from heaven, but from far away. In light of this, we need to move forward to the final section of this week's parsha, the Akedah, Perek Beis, Pasuk Yud Aleph. In the background, of course, we know very well, Avram is taking Yitzchak, and he's about to kill him. Until Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayikra Elav, Malach Hashem, Min Hashamayim. A Malach calls him from heaven, says, "Avram, Avram, Vayomeinani, don't touch him, leave him, it's done, you've passed," etc., and so forth. But what's fascinating is, after all we've seen in Hagar, and for her, the descent is represented by not deserving of being addressed by a Malach and approached by a Malach, and that's why the Malach spoke to her from heaven. So now Avram is never greater, is never better. And for him too, the Malach called Menashe Mayim. How can that be explained? With Meshech Chochma, the reason why the Malach does not approach Avram at this time is for the exact opposite reason of Hagar. What does that mean? He cites a very interesting medrash. The medrash says, that Avraham Avinu, at the time of the Akedah, he was like the Kohen Gadol. He was like a Kohen Gadol. So Meshech Chochma, right, himself a Kohen, so he knows that, why are you calling him a Kohen Gadol? Perhaps what you mean to say is that, you know, if he's involved in the Avodah, it was going to be a Korban. So one needs to be a Kohen to do a Korban, but you don't need to be a Kohen Gadol. And therefore, we can't just gloss over these things. If you tell me he's a Kohen, whatever that means. But he's a Kohen Gadol? Why is that significant? Because, says Meshech Chochma, Avram's experience in the Akedah and his Avodah in the Akedah was actually the equivalent of something that only the Kohen Gadol can do. And that is, the Kohen Gadol is the only Kohen that can enter the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur and do the Avodah there. As if to say, what's happening here, and you see Meshech Chochma, as he often does, and it's really a fascinating thing, he sees equivalencies in conditions, equivalencies in status, whereby the formal institution of a Kohen Gadol has yet to happen. But the Medrash says he's like a Kohen Gadol. And the reason why is because he had already attained, through the Akedah, the level of closeness and elevation with Hashem that is equivalent to the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And in fact, Meshech Chochma goes on as the whole Torah is open before him. You know, the halacha states that a shofar shouldn't come from the horn of a cow. It normally comes from the horn of a ram. It can be from other animals, but certainly not from a cow. Why not? Because the cow is reminiscent of the egel, that whole set. So ein kategor, nasa senegor, the well-known expression. The prosecution cannot become the defense. The egel and that whole family, so that represents a mark against the Jewish people. You can't defend against that with the very item of prosecution. But the Gemara says, well, that's not always the case. We only invoke the principle of ein kategor nasa senegor in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It's not always true generally in the Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara says, yes, but when you blow the shofar, it's reminiscent. It's the koron. And therefore, it's like the Beis Hamikdash, it's like the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Those are the words of the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, there in Taf Kaf Vav. Kevan de lezikaron asi, since it's coming for remembrance, kilefnim dami. It's like you're inside. It's like you're inside the inside. It's Kodesh HaKadoshim. And therefore, we invoke Enkateko Nasa Senegor, and the horn of a cow is disqualified for a shofar. Says Meshech Chochma, you want to know why, since the shofar is coming to arouse a remembrance, it's like the Kodesh HaKadoshim, because the event that it's commemorating was a Kodesh HaKadoshim event. That's the point. The shofar is a commemoration of the Akedah, of Akedas Yitzchak. Hashem says, lo, before the shofar, I remember Akedas Yitzchak. That's why, because we are bringing back an event which actually attained the status of the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur. That's why the item that brings you back there has Kodesh HaKadoshim rules. Because it's recalling a Kodesh HaKadoshim event. That's why Avram is a Kohen Gadol. So, says Meshech Chochma, if you look in Parshas Acharemos, the laning for Yom Kippur morning, it says, when the Kohen Gadol is in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, no one else can be there. V'chol Adam lo yeh ba'al moed, no one else can be there. And there's a fascinating comment of the Yerushalmi in Maseches Yuma in Perek Aleph, Halacha Hey, which says that when the Pasuk states, it clears the Kodesh HaKadoshim, no one else can be there. V'chol Adam, says Yerushalmi, not only people, afilu osam shekosuv peneihem penei Adam, even Malachim, as the Pasuk describes in Yechezkel, their visage is like that of the person, whatever that means. Pneim pipnei Adam, no one can be there. No people can be there. No Malachim can be there. Says Meshech Chochma. Now you understand why, when the Malach told him that he has to stop the Akedah, he didn't approach him. He called him in a Shamayim. It's the exact opposite. It's the polar opposite to what happened with Hagar. With Hagar, the angel called him in a Shemayim because she wasn't deserving of a Malach approaching her at that stage. with Avram, the reason why it's called Ben Shamayim is because the Malach wasn't able to approach him because it was like the Kodesh HaKadoshim. No one else can be there. Not Adam and not Elish Shenem or Pnei Pnei Adam. Even a Malach had to be cleared from such a kid. It's absolutely just Avram Avinu with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're going to get a message through, you're going to have to call from afar. So this is the incredible analysis of Meshech Chochmah, sweeping through the Parsha, attention to detail, knowledge of Kol HaTorah Kula, and the rest is the Meshech Chochmah puts together for us. We'll leave it over here for this evening.